Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parent in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parents in Hell with...
Izzy, can you say Rob Beckett? Rob Beckett. Can you say Josh
Widdicombe?
Well done. That was nice,
wasn't it? Nice little one.
Hello, you sexy and relatable things. This is Sophia, 86 months, talking to her little sister, Isabella, almost three. Sorry for all the clattering they were having their dinner. Sophia has enjoyed saying your name for months now and has been trying to make Isabella say it, but usually the response she gets is no. This was the first time Isabella played along. We went to the O2 live show. Sophia was shocked to discover you are actual real life people, not just funny names to say. Thanks for keeping me laughing and brightening up my quiet days in the office. That's Lauren from Great Dunmo, Essex. You're Dunmo. Great Dunmo. What the fuck is that? I've never heard of that.
No idea.
Great Dunmo.
No idea. Met a fan of the podcast last night, Rob.
Yeah.
She said to me, she lived in Kent.
Yeah.
And she said she's been trying to work out. She's like, yeah, I know where Rob lives now. And from what he's saying, I've been trying to piece together where he's moving to.
Oh, God. That's and I thought, concern,
so I just gave her the postcode of your new address.
How did you? Yeah. Well, everyone knows where I live because I walk.
Well, you've got that big picture of yourself on the gate, haven't
you? Yeah, and get beat. Yeah, Beckett. I've got Beckett Towers in 10-foot letters written on the front.
Yeah.
Trying to escape a bit of quiet time now. Right. Before we bring on Rick Edwards, who is sort of disarmingly attractive, it's quite stressful.
So good looking, isn't
it? We mention it, but it's actually really panics you, doesn't it?
Do you want some correspondence? Boomers. Hi, Josh and Rob. When my mum was a kid, her and her huge family were taken to Blackpool, and the fun house included one of those insanely indoor vertical drop plastic slides. Ooh. Death slides, I think you'll remember them to be called, Rob. Is that correct?
Well, they basically repurposed a death slide for a beat the wall, haven't they? I spoke about it before. Are they the ones you hold onto and they drag you up and let you go, or do you climb up it some stairs?
You climb up, sit, and then you just fall, don't you?
Yep, so the new version of that is they put you in like a suit, because my kid's done it, and you hold onto like a stick and they pull you up and you go as high as you want to go. Rather than you climbing up there and shitting yourself, basically you start at 1, 2, and it's like the top level, which is 6, but it slowly builds your confidence rather than you climbing 6
good.
Flight of stairs and your dad screams at you, get down the death slide, what's wrong with you? Fucking hell, we're on holiday, supposed to enjoy ourselves, slide down the death slide.
My mum's twin brother was wearing a brown hand-knitted acrylic cardigan.
Oh my.
That feels like a detail we need to know.
Yes.
And as he flew down the slide at a great rate of knots, he put his hand in the pocket of cardigan, creating a space for static sparks to catch a light.
No.
As he reached terminal velocity at the bottom of the slide, his whole cardigan caught on fire.
No.
He was quickly patted down and the day continued like nothing had happened. Classic 70s boomer parenting.
Oh, my God.
Keep up the amazing podcast. I'm very much enjoying laughing out loud at my long walks. You make the day go faster. Much love, Lowell Palmer.
I thought it was a death slide because of the height, not that you'd catch a light.
Yeah.
How can material make do that? Like,
how do they know the pocket is the thing that created the fire? Like, that's a very precise way of the parents blaming the kid. Well, you should never put your hand in your pocket, should you? That's why it caught fire. Hi, Rob and Josh. I have very clear memories of going to a local social club with my dad on a Friday and Saturday evening, along with the other local dads and their kids. My dad would enjoy a few beers while I only had one can of Diet Coke for the entire evening. How on earth would one can of Diet Coke last a four-year-old all evening? Well, my dad used to tell me that if I drank my Coke really, really slowly, there'd be a free holiday to Disneyland at the bottom.
Oh,
no.
That's awful.
Cue me drinking as slowly as possible all evening to excitedly look through the hole in the bottom of the empty can to see nothing but metal. I would turn to my dad and say there was no holiday. My dad would then reply, well, you have to drink it slower next time.
Oh.
Fucking hell. I genuinely only cottoned onto this when I was in my 20s.
Oh, God. That's when the old trauma starts coming out.
Yeah. Thanks, Laura Bilcock.
Do you think boomer parenting is basically drunk parenting?
Well, there is an element of that, isn't
there?
They're
at a party and they're pissed and they can't remember what they've said and they say some crap. Because I'm not, and this is not me, just because I remember when I was at that barbecue the other week when I was drunk, I just was saying yes to everything. I wasn't telling them that they'd win it, but like you say things that you're basically, so I was talking about this because basically you're unconscious, you're doing unconscious parenting, aren't you? Because yeah. You're drunk, you're not conscious, you're not making decisions from a conscious state, which is what I have to do to stop myself getting over excited. So if I'm too stressed, I have to slow down and do my breathing and meditation so that I'm conscious, because I can become unconscious. Alcohol makes you unconscious, like even just a few drinks, because you're just wavy and you're having the feeling of being merry or drunk. You're not really thinking about everything. So that's why people do it. It calms your brain down, doesn't it? But it can also be a pattern of behavior where if I get unconscious thinking, I'm just going, right, I've got to do this, got to do that, because I need to get some money. And I'm running off old ways of thinking rather than actually feeling how I feel about it. If someone says, do you want to do this job? If I'm unconscious, I'll just go, yep, do that, because I need to work. I need to get money, because that's what we do. I've got a poverty mindset. I need money more and stuff. Where actually, if I'm conscious, I can be like, no, let's breathe through this. Do I really want to go there? What's happening next week? What's happening? And then you make better decisions because you're more conscious. And that's something where I'm now thinking about drinking a little bit less, because I'm doing so well in my day-to-day life, trying to be more conscious and measured in my decision-making. But then as soon as I go to the pub, I get pissed. And then before I know it, I've replied to 4 emails and I'm off to the Isle of Man for a 5-night gig. I'm like, what happened? So I think maybe some of this boomer parenting comes from being slightly unconscious decision-making. Because really, most people know that's a bit of a mean thing to say to your kids. And you can't dress it up as, oh, it's only a laugh. No, it's not. Because children think literally, and they literally think they're going to go to Disney if they drink that Coke slowly. But anyway, so a bit of a weird rant, but that's something I've been thinking about.
I think it's interesting. I think it's genuinely interesting. When my eldest was year three, it was her first year doing Christmas in her new school. As we approached the festive season, in anticipation of the mental load hitting dizzying heights, I asked her if she was working on any Christmas projects. She simply looked at me and said, no, we don't really do Christmas at this school because, you know, we've got Joe Wicks's kids there. What? This clearly stopped me in my tracks, as we live in rural Leicestershire and Joe Wicks's kids definitely don't go to a school. So I double checked. Are you sure on that? She said deadpan. Yeah, Joe Wicks's kids really don't like Christmas. Completely dumbfounded, I looked at her and put the pieces together. They don't like Christmas, to which it struck me. Do you mean Jehovah's Witnesses? I said. Yes, that's it, she said. She's confused. Jehovah's Witnesses. Presuming them to be Joe Wicks's kids because it sounded the same.
It'd be really confusing if Joe Wicks came out as a Jehovah's Witness.
It would. It'd be very confusing. Do you know what? We should have read that email out before the Peter Andre episode. That's bad presenting from us. But instead, Rob, we've got an incredible guest.
Yes. I love Rick Edwards. He's a good guy. But also as well, he's real in the midst of work-life balance and new baby and their first baby. So not only has he got his work-life balance, he's also got like his old life, new life balance of being a parent now and trying to juggle it. And I think he's doing well, but I think it's tiring.
Yeah, he still looks annoyingly good. This is Rick Edwards. Hello, Rick Edwards. How are you?
You just said that like you read it, like you don't know Rick.
No. Richie Edwards?
Yeah, I mean, Richie's fine with me, actually. I didn't choose to be. The only reason I'm Rick and not Rich is because I changed schools. And when I joined the new school, there was a lad who had been quite popular who just left, who was called Rick. And so everyone was just like, well, we'll just call you Rick as well, just easier.
Oh, that's good. So you rode the wave of his popularity.
Yeah, it was actually quite a handy way in because it's intimidating going to a new school.
Yeah.
It worked quite nicely, so I didn't question it. Also, to be honest, I sort of felt like better for someone else to choose it for you, because I think Rick is better than Rich, but I'd never had...
Rick. I definitely... It's much better, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. So, yeah, but anyway, call me whatever you like. It's fine. You can read it.
But before we start, Rick, I do need to say I'm quite happy with doing this on Zoom, because you are one of the most devastatingly tall and handsome people I've ever met. And it's quite difficult to concentrate in your company, I find, Rick.
Yeah, I mean, it's disappointing I could see you reading that off as well, Rob.
No, but I'm not. I'm trying to find... What I'm trying to do is, I'm trying to find a photo of me and you when I met you at Wimbledon, and I look like a child next to you, a pathetic little child next to this massive man that looks lovely. It cracked me up, that photo. But
we had a nice time at Wimbledon, didn't we?
Oh, it's a lovely gig. That was Stormzy was there that year. And he sat behind me, and he'd never been to tennis before. And he went, and when it went 15 love, he went, "Oh, swear down, he got 15 for that."
Yeah. It immediately makes you think the BBC have missed a trick not to have red button Stormzy commentary.
I know.
Well, we will come to parenting, as we always do, but me and Rob are obsessed, because we're obsessed with sleep on this show, with people who do breakfast radio and what their lives are like.
Yeah. So, well, in a word, terrible. But also,
so you do the breakfast show on Five Live, six till ten? Is that
6 till 9? Actually,
6 till 9.
So what's even more annoying about that is that lots of people will say to you, "Do you know what? It's the perfect job for being a parent." I'm like, well, it clearly isn't. I get even less sleep than everyone else, and no one else in the house is getting enough sleep.
So you're 6 till 9, and how old is your child?
He is 14 weeks, so it's all quite...
You're in the trenches. 14 weeks.
Yeah.
And how much did you take paternity leave?
2 weeks, and then 2 weeks holiday, so 4 weeks total. Right.
And you're back in the saddle. So is it like London or Manchester?
I'm London at the moment, and then we're schlepping back up to Manchester. But like all of our friends and family are around here, so it didn't really make any sense to maroon us. I was in Cheshire, where we know literally no one.
So where do you live there? Do you live in Cheshire at the moment?
We will do, yeah.
Yeah, once the baby's a bit older, you'll be up there.
Yeah, well, actually, not that much older. So I think in about 2 weeks' time. I think the party line is I'm excited to get back up there, and the reality is I'm dreading it.
Right.
Because obviously it's tough when there's night feeds going on and you're going, "I've got to be up at 7. Mm-hmm. But you're going, "I've got to be up at 3?
Yeah, well, 3:30 actually. Yeah,
3:30. All right.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. And there's a sort of sense. Well, I don't know if you had it, but I have, where you feel a bit like a spare part, because there's only so much that as a dad you can do.
It's a lot of toast making or getting water and stuff.
Right, it's sort of like hovering around on the periphery, just being ready to do anything that is asked of you, but fundamentally a bit of a spare part.
And, so and is she breastfeeding then? Is that?
Yeah, because we can't really share it. I mean, I really have tried.
No, but that's the thing. It's so different. Like, because Lou couldn't breastfeed, it was like, if you're like a bottle baby, it's so much more split down the middle. Mm. But when the baby's breastfed, the bloke literally cannot do anything.
No.
But to help with that kind of thing.
Yeah, and I remember seeing this years ago and thinking that's quite funny, maybe I'll get that. But you can get a sort of like prosthetic tits. And
like Paul Gascoigne.
Not permanent, but strap-on ones. And then you can fill them with formula or whatever. Yeah. And then you can, as a man, sort of breastfeed.
Wow.
And I was...
Are you tempted to go with the fake tit bowls?
I was. Of course I was. And that, in the end, it doesn't... It feels weirdly disrespectful to Ema somehow if I suddenly roll in
with a pair of fake tits. Yeah, mansplaining. Here we go. Don't, I've got my own tits. Watch out. This is how you do it, love. Here we
go. Oh, I'll get him to latch in no time. Yeah.
And that's how you latch. That's how you latch, okay?
But anyway, so the thing that I find is then you have to be available and sort of enthusiastic at all times. And so what I do the changing. So when he feeds at night, obviously I'm not doing the feeding, but I am doing the changing. So I am getting up, not like every time, but sort of quite regularly. So I'm completely broken. I'm so tired.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be any way around it. sort of constantly looking. Like, there was definitely a time in my life where when I told people how old I was, people would be like, no. And I feel like that has completely, in a matter of months, has completely gone. Now I'm like, I'm 43, and people are like, yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a delicate way to say it. I'd say at the moment, I've seen you looking perkier.
Yeah, yes.
You definitely look like a man that's got stuff going on.
Yeah.
If I saw you in the queue at Sainsbury's and I had a big trolley full and you had some coffee and some bread, I'd go ahead, mate. Yeah. You need to get out of this sharpish.
And so what are your nights like when they, like, what time are you going to bed? Like 7?
Well, so pre-baby, I was sort of trying to go to bed at about 8, and now it's slipped to sort of 9, 9:30, sometimes 10. I mean, we're really sort of, and I'm not, in many ways, actually, not a Maggie Thatcher figure. I can't sort of cope on 4 hours sleep. Like, I'm terrible. I'm really, right. I'm an old school 8 hours guy.
Really?
Are you?
And I'm getting nowhere near 8 hours.
No.
Oh, my word. And so what's it like at 3:30 when you've had those, that broken night, and then you're like, what are you doing between 3:30 and 6?
So getting in and then doing prep for the show, because it's not, annoyingly, it's not one of these low-effort,
you can't just riff it,
shows. Yeah.
Yeah. low-effort, high reward. You can't play, there's no music. Is there music at that time?
There's no music.
That is brutal.
It's just me chatting to people about quite serious stuff.
Really. I'd say we cycle between 2, 5, and 6 in the mornings. Yeah. And the sense of relief in your voice when you're talking about the last night's Premier League games is palpable.
Which actually is probably not a great compliment to my broadcasting skills. You shouldn't ideally be able to hear that. Oh, he's happy again.
Let him get through that bit. He'll be happy.
I think you do a sterling job. I'm projecting on you.
Because Chris Evans famously used to turn up for his breakfast show as they were doing the news.
Yeah.
So actually his show had officially started at 6 or something. He'd swan in at 6:02 and then start talking at 6:03.
Yeah, I mean, years and years ago, I did a show on what was then XFM. And you could, like, yeah, I'd sometimes be, like, running down the corridors, sweating to get in to be able to speak straight after whatever it was at the top of the hour. And you sort of...
The Foo Fighters. Like, it was the Foo Fighters, yeah, I'll tell you that.
Foo Fighters, or it was Kasabian. And you're like, well, you know, it's sort of straightforward enough not to disrespect the fine work that, you know, Johnny Vaughan and Chris Moyles are doing over there, of course. But...
So it's hard. You've got to concentrate because you've got serious stuff to chat about.
Yeah, yeah. You do have to concentrate, it turns out. So that is problematic. And I've had my first, sort of in the last 2 weeks, I've had the first time when my alarm has gone off. I've been doing the job for 18 months now, something like that, where the alarm has gone off and I've thought, what actually happens if I don't turn up here? how bad is it? How many strikes do I get? Is it immediate dismissal, or is there a little bit of wriggle room?
Yeah,
because you know, new dad, and yeah, of course the guy's fucking knackered. Like you got to, you know, but I've thought that a couple of times now.
Yeah.
I think we're probably only a few weeks off me actually putting it to the test.
Or like a footballer, you know, like a footballer where they just don't turn up to training, but it hangs on because you can't just sack someone if there's a contract. So if this makes you feel better, every single stand-up gig I ever do, just before they announce, because wherever you walk on the stage, there's normally an emergency fire door. I always look at that door and go, I could just go that way.
Easy.
Yeah. Welcome to... No, I've gone there. Yeah, for every... So that's always in my head. But I think, what I would say is, Rick, you're over the excitement of the newborn and all that buzz and energy. You are just like in the proper trenches of like, you're not getting much back from the kid. It's not like they're running around cuddling and being cute and talking and saying that it's like hardcore graft where it feels sort of the buzz has sort of gone, it's back to reality, but it will get better, Rick.
But also in absolute fairness to the little guy, I mean, I completely like, I love him. Like, he's great. Like the sort of the actual being with him bit, I enjoy it. And like because there isn't much that is being offered, a little smile. Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, oh, I'm on cloud nine. Yeah. I absolutely love it. It's incredible. And it's just, and it's probably a smile that he doesn't even know he's doing.
Yeah, well, he'll take it.
Yeah, completely.
Did you have, like, were you told 3 months was a big target? I remember that being a big thing, that things will get easier after 3 months.
Well, I think I've heard all sorts of stuff, because obviously
bollocks.
Bollocks to impart.
Yes, it was bollocks. I just wanted to reassure you that it is bollocks.
Okay, great. One of the main things that I remember about the birth itself was in the run up. Like I like to sort of research and read about stuff, so I did loads of reading. And there's lots of science, and I was like, great, I can really get my teeth into it.
You've wasted your time there.
So you put together, you know, your birth plan, and I've got my printed out birth plan, and I'm there, and I'm all ready to go. And there was just a really bleak and sobering moment for me where I remember, just as it's all kicking off and everything's going on, and I just slowly just fold up my little A4 but just slide it silently into the pocket. Not going to be needing that, I don't think.
How was you at the birth? Did you stay composed, or did it send you sideways?
I nearly fainted twice, which is really humiliating. There's an amazing, twice actually I got shouted at. Once by the midwife.
By Ema?
Once by Ema, once by the midwife. The midwife shouting at me, sir, I'm going to need you to sit down and drink some of that Lucozade. Specifically, the Lucozade that we bought for Ema.
What was you doing?
I'd just gone really pale. And I was a bit wobbly, I think. I was so aware of it happening. I was like, you cannot be this guy. You must not be this guy. And then later on, same. Just nearly felt like I was about to faint again. And Ema just started shouting at me about there being some fruit pastels in the bag. So, yeah, I don't think I cover myself in glory.
Oh, mate. It's horrible, though, because there's nothing you can do, is there? But your brain's kind of, what can I do? There's nothing. You just have to watch.
Yeah, you're trembled. Yeah, you've got to watch. You're watching the person you love most in the world go through something that is clearly completely unacceptable. From every possible standpoint, that should not be happening to anyone. It's a bad system that evolution's done a very poor job on, in my view.
And then I was like, the only thing I can be in control of is me not making it worse. And then I was just making it worse by panicking.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, the only thing I can do, I'm not doing.
Did you find yourself, because I found what I did was I focused so much on the birth as a thing that when we were then left with a baby, it kind of took me by surprise, if you know what I mean. I hadn't thought about life after the birth. The birth was so central to that first child.
Yeah. No, it's a very... it's just a very surreal experience where you're sort of looking at this creature and being like, and now, you know, you've had all of this sort of medical help, and then they just go, shake your hand, best of luck. And then you sort of go, and you're trying to figure out how a car seat works. And, you know, you're right. You fixate on that and getting through that without particularly processing the fact that you're now going home with a small human that you have to try and keep alive, and you're not really entirely sure how to do that.
So could you, like you said, you're really into science, and you like to read and prep. You know, your podcast Eureka is you talking to a scientist about science. And I've noticed in one of your episodes, it's like a scientific approach to being good at being a dad.
Yeah.
So what did you discover in that episode?
It's a real, as you can tell, it's essentially just a vehicle for me to get answers to questions that I would like to be answered. I don't really consider the audience at all. I'm just like, well, I want to know how to be a good dad, so let's get someone in to tell
me. Because you're into science, and you've got an official doctor scientist person on. But what made me laugh is one of your episodes is called, Is the Metaverse Going to Be Shit?
Yeah.
And I was like, this sounds like the kind of science podcast I could get into.
Yeah, well, it's a reasonable question. And the answer, if you can't be bothered to listen to the episode, which is fine, is, of course it is. but fundamentally, the reason that me and Michael, who's the quantum physicist I do it with, wanted to do the podcast is that we both really like science and think science is really fun, but most science is presented in quite a dull way. Yeah. It's quite boring or just quite reverential, and there's no need for it to be. And so we just kind of try and do it in a slightly more engaging way.
What did you find about what makes a great father then?
So it's all fairly straight. It's sort of stuff that you already know. The big thing I took out of it, and it's too early for that with ours at the moment, is rough and tumble is apparently a really big part of, like, that's the dad's role. It's to do
rough and tumble.
Yeah. For all sorts of kind of developmental reasons, it's really good. Setting boundaries, like getting them to sort of read people's emotions and stuff. But it's rough and tumble, so it feels like it's quite good fun as well.
That's good, because I'm quite into rough and tumble, mainly because my children are the only people I can overpower.
What a great
It's the only time I feel like I'm winning a fight.
We play trap, which is sort of where I lay on the floor face down and they've got to try and run past me, and then I grab them and trap them and they have to release each other.
That's a good game. That's why I see if BBC Daytime are interested.
Yeah. Right. Also, they're getting a bit bigger now. It's time to feel like jiu-jitsu training. I might just take them down the gym because as they get bigger, my seven-year-old, like, she's like, you know, quite tall now and quite heavy. And they used to jump on me, but she jumped from her bed. I was on the floor, so it's a bit of a leap from the bed, and jumped onto me with her knees, like, tucked up into my back. It was like a rock. And I was like, fucked. And she was like, oh, sorry. I'm like, you can't do that. But yours is going to start to bash you up, Josh.
Yeah. Well, I enjoy it, though. It's fun, the old rough and tumble.
Rick, I know you don't, you know, the mornings are hard work now, especially with the little one. What I would say is, though, done by 9.
Yes.
You're going to be able to pick them up from school every single day. And I get to do that quite a bit because of I work randomly and stuff like that. So I do get to pick them up from school. And there's not still, I know it's 2023, there's still not a lot of dads doing that. And to be able to do that is privilege. And it's going to feel amazing, especially.
You're gonna be able to drop them off at school after work.
No, most schools start after 9. No, before 9, Josh.
Yeah. I think that would be, I'd have to nip out during the show, I think, to do that.
No, I don't. I think that's psychologically damaging to do your day at work, school drop off, and school pickup. I think it has a slow morning from 9 o'clock. Yeah. Have an afternoon nap. You've got to introduce the afternoon nap.
I can't. The thing with the nap, I do need to get better at the nap. There's no question. When I have a nap, and I think I've been like this since I was a baby, according to my mum and dad, I wake up in a fury with a boiling hot face. I don't know why. Like bright, really? Like bright red, and just like so cross, and that's no way to live.
You really need your sleep, don't you? You are a proper 8 hours old school guy. Yeah. Aren't you?
Otherwise, I sort of turn into Hellboy.
And is Ema good without sleep, or is it? What's it like in this?
She seems much, much better on it. Yeah, I mean, given that very obviously it's much harder for her.
Yeah,
I'm suffering more. She's incredible. That's the other thing that I've definitely taken from this whole experience so far. It's wow. I don't know how I would be complaining so much. I mean, I'm complaining quite a lot as it is. I don't know how she's doing it, but she seems to be coping very well. And
how are you? Have you done any long journeys yet?
Yes, we did. A really wonderful journey back from West Wales on holiday Monday.
Oh, my word.
That was a sweet 7.5 hours.
Oh, in the car.
Yeah, we did walk it. although might as well have done, to be honest. so that was a big ask. But then on this week, and I can't work out if this is going to be a good thing or a bad thing, but Ema's up for an award and the ceremony is in New York. So we are going to New York on Wednesday.
With
the baby. And I'm like, this year, like we should definitely do this because it's exciting. You're up for an award in America.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Great. I wonder how that's going to go.
I don't know.
I'd say it's easier flying with a 14-week-old than having like a toddler on a plane.
Yeah.
Because I think up to six months, you can travel with them. Like, I don't want to bring them around down early doors, Rick, because like you say, you feel like you're 43, people have said that you're not that, oh, you look so good for your age, that's sort of dying down a little bit. And you've got this...
It's gone.
Yeah. And if you're, you know, and you might want more kids, you know, as well, on top of the one you've already got, I don't know, that's up to you guys. But you, until your youngest is four, you will never enjoy a holiday.
Yeah, no, pretty much all of my friends have said that. Yeah, like, it's not my best friend's main advice to me before was like, get in a really good holiday.
Yeah,
as close to the birth as possible, because you will really cherish that.
Because if you go for another kid, Rick, you're looking at being 50 before you relax on a beach.
Yeah, I mean, imagine so one of my other best friends, he's been incredibly smug, partly just because he's slightly smug, but he had kids relatively early, for the rest of our friends anyway. So he's got two daughters, 14 and 11, and his thing has always been, and so I'm basically done, and he's, you know, he's like in his early 40s, and I'm like, I'm golden, like they're going to be looking after themselves quite soon. And his wife is a little bit older. And then she got pregnant again. They just had a son.
Oh yes! Oh my god! Amazing.
Of course, he loves the boy. It's totally derailed his like life plan.
Yeah,
he thought it was all sorted.
Oh, that's amazing.
Oh my word!
I think you should be okay with two of you on that flight. If you're breastfed as well, it should be able to like comfort.
Is it a night flight or a day flight?
Day.
Are you doing dummies?
Yes. Yeah.
And I was going to say,
We had, I think our resistance to dummies broke after about 4 days, maybe.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Just go
I think the dummy thing is, I think it's absolutely fine. I've never met an adult at work still with a dummy in a meeting. It will die down.
And so what's your day involve at the moment, Rick? How much parenting are you looking at until bedtime at 8 p.m?
Well, I mean, it's just...
Are you on a nap schedule? Yeah.
No, we haven't got any sort of schedule yet. I'm quite interested in starting to sleep train. I don't know when. I think that might be soon-ish.
I would say, I think we started at 6 months.
Yeah, I thought 6 months is one that gets bandied around. That seems sort of reasonable-ish.
And still in your 6 months, presumably, is he still in your room?
Yeah.
And how are you finding that?
It's fine, because when I'm during the week, I will then go into what is technically his room that he doesn't use and sleep in the small single bed. In a heartbreaking fashion, and then Emil will sort of bring, and that's where his changing stuff is. So Emil will bring him in, and I'll be like, and then sort of lurch out of bed, change him. So
she'll breastfeed and bring him in to change, wake you up.
Yeah.
She'll go back to bed. You change, and then you put him back in the next to the bed.
Yeah, it's
the
sort of system.
It's awful, isn't it? Like being woken up, light on, change that. Fuck it. I'm terrible in the morning. I don't need loads of sleep, but I am awful when I've just been woken up. And to the point where Lou would shout at me because I wasn't doing it quick enough. And I felt like a confused old parent. You know, like your granddads get all a bit old and confused at a bus stop, and then they're tired child's like, oh, get on with it, granddaddy. Like, oh, but I don't know what I'm doing. I'm so shit. I can't do it.
The thing that I'm sort of disappointed in myself at is that my body doesn't, my brain doesn't seem to be able to learn that is a thing that's going to happen. So every time, it's the same sort of bewildered shock as I was trying to work out where I am. I think by now, I should be like, yes, okay, I'm like, it's changing. Yeah, it's what we do.
I just don't think you ever get used to, because you've had, in reality, you know, 40 years of not doing something the instant you wake up.
Yeah.
It's so rare before you have children that you have to act upon waking up.
Yeah.
The snooze button, even the snooze button, that's not an option with a child.
No, it's just gone. The sad demise of the snooze button, actually.
Well, I've not set an alarm in the morning. I've never set an alarm in the morning since kids. Because they're going to be up at 6, unless you're going somewhere. Once when I was getting a flight at 6 a.m, but not really. Not even for the school drop-off, I know.
Yeah, I occasionally set an alarm when I have a nap. That's about as far as I go.
Well, that's the thing I've learned to get. When I get to gigs, I try and get to gigs at 6, do my sound check, have something to eat. 6:30 to 7:30, I sleep. And then I have half an hour trying to G myself up to do the gig. And that's the only way I've managed to be able to be a present parent and gig in the evenings, because like what I was doing before was like looking after kids, getting there at like 7:45, going on and just trying to run off the adrenaline. But you have to try and re-energize at some point.
Are you a napper, Josh?
Yeah, I like a nap. I think if I put a podcast on, I can be out like a light.
Have a go on Eureka. it's good stuff, but some of it gets quite heavy. That'll send you off.
Yeah, it needs to be something like I listen to a history podcast or something that's like a bit. Not funny, but like a bit backgroundy. Do you know what I mean?
And the voices don't really change. They're not too up and down with the laughter.
Yeah. Sort of just a monotone history podcast.
two middle-aged men talking about the Suez Crisis, and I'm gone. Do you know what I mean?
And incredibly, you've probably got a choice of 10, 15 podcasts that will do exactly that.
Yeah, exactly.
Being released every day. I think you're gonna have to learn to nap, Rick.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. I think, but it feels like it's going to be a real uphill battle, because if I've always been like this, like my parents wouldn't let me, if we went on a car journey, they would. Their whole thing was try and keep me awake the whole time, because if I did fall asleep in the car, when I then got to get me out of the car, it'd be a complete nightmare. I think it might be beyond me.
You get with your job to travel around to big sporting events and stuff, don't you?
Yeah.
So have you got any big things coming up where you're thinking, am I going to take the family to this?
Well, I mean, I was sort of wondering, I mean, it's not for a little while, but if we do the Euros, which is Germany next year, which I really hope we do, because it'd be fucking brilliant. And I was like, get a camper van or whatever. And I vaguely floated that to... to him, she's like, are you seriously suggesting we travel around Germany in a camper van for 6 weeks so you can watch the football? I did that sort of thing where I was like, tried to go, no, of course I'm joking. No, we're not going to do that. Yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, so you'd have an 18-month-old in a camper van. It'd be you driving to trying to find soft play centres in Cologne.
And also you'd be still be getting up at 3:30, but in a camper van, because you'd be hosting the breakfast show from Munich or something, right?
Yes, but with the time difference, 4:30. So actually...
Oh, yeah.
When you're at work, like, so when I, in those early weeks and months, I remember, like, getting a text off Rose 4 minutes before going live on the last leg saying that she couldn't get our daughter to sleep and all that kind of stuff. Are you hosting the breakfast show, interviewing, I don't know, Suella Braverman down the line, and you're getting a text saying he's not latching on?
What, from Suella about Rishi?
Yeah, going back to the thing about doing your work when you're sort of knackered or whatever.
Yeah.
When I first started doing TV, live TV, when I was, God, I mean, it's probably 20 years ago. Yeah, it was 20 years ago. And my dad saying, oh, it'll be, and my dad knows nothing about this industry at all. And he just said, oh, it'll be difficult when you're on live TV if you're in a bad time or you're like in a bad mood. And I hadn't really sort of gauged that. But it's so true that it's like you have to put a like you absolutely have to.
You can't do your radio show and go, oh, hello, yeah, woke up a few times tonight. We've got
no one cares. Yeah. Fundamentally, no one cares.
And they're like, I'm tired too. That's why I'm listening to you to wake me up.
Yeah, and particularly on the BBC, because people are just screaming, I'm paying your wages.
Oh, yeah. It is hard on the BBC, especially that kind of show where you're talking about different opinions and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Should we do the final question, Josh? Well, this has been brilliant, Rick. Thanks for doing it.
It's been an absolute joy.
With the little one.
Where is the little one as we speak, Rick?
He is at his grandparents' house.
Making the last use of the grandparents before you move north.
Well, that's the thing. They live like 10 minutes away. It's perfect. It's a really good setup. Yeah. Stop laughing, Rob.
Sorry, Rick.
Oh, God.
Oh, mate. Yeah.
But actually, to be fair, they'll only be 200 miles away.
Maybe you could find room for them in your camper van when you're touring Germany and Paris over next summer.
The camper van I was definitely joking about, Josh.
Okay. Yeah, of course.
The final question, Rick, what is about your partner, and what is the one thing she does that frustrates you with the baby that's quite annoying? And if she listened, she'd go, yeah, that is a fair point, actually, if you brought that up. And what is the other thing that she does? We like, she's so incredible and so lucky to have a baby with her.
I don't know what it is. So I'll deal with the second one first because it's easier. She has, like, I have completely mirrored what she does to rock the baby to sleep. Like, I've scrutinized the exact action,
yeah,
replicated it, and it takes me a minimum three times longer,
yeah,
to get the baby,
yeah,
to sleep. And it's real, and I'm like, it's like there's a sort of alchemy or magic going on.
It's like when some people can work out when a piece of clothing is a fake. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like you're fraudulently trying to pass off what she's doing.
Yeah.
And he knows.
Yeah. Yeah. He can smell it on me.
Yeah. You're the stars in their eyes version of her being the actual pop star.
Yeah. Yeah. I was coming through the smoke.
Here he comes again.
And then the thing, well, this is not really a thing that I think, well, she would, I wonder what she would think about this. Well, we'll find out maybe. I think I probably have a slightly less militant, I would have a slightly less militant approach to the staining of clothes. So my feeling is, of course the baby is going to shit himself.
Yeah.
Of course the clothes are going to get a little bit, you know, but then they're not in them for that long because they grow out of them and it's sort of fine. But what we have in place is a vibe where as soon as he soils anything, it gets put in a special pile, not the regular pile, where we just put it in the washing machine, where I have to, by hand, with my fingers, scrub it with fairy liquid. And so I scrub the shit stains out of the clothes. I'm doing this on a daily basis.
Yeah, of course.
And I think, you know, yeah, left to me, that's not happening.
Left to you, what are you doing?
Well, left to me, I'm just sticking it in the wash and hoping, you know.
Can I raise you one more straight in the bin?
Yeah, not bad.
My rule was, I said, let's not spend money on expensive, nice ones. Let's buy the cheapest, thinnest baby grows, that, you know, the white ones that go first layer before you put the rest of the clothes on.
Yeah.
And then I know it's wasteful, but it's only a moment in time. They are getting launched straight in the fucking bin. Life is too short to scrub shit out of cotton. I'm not doing it.
Yeah. Why didn't I marry you, Rob?
We'd both be terrible in the morning room. Nothing will get done. Fair enough. Oh, I think that's a fair point, to be fair, that you don't want to be scrubbing shitty clothes in your bare hands.
It's the face. It's the fingers. Like it's directly on my fingers. I just get there. And then, I don't know, it sort of feels humiliating.
Just say you've done it and it's in the bin. That's what I did.
We seem to be running low on those, but no.
Buy a job lot as cheap as you can find them. Rick, it's been amazing. Thank you so much. Good luck with your podcast, Eureka. Give it a listen. And it will get better. I know we're laughing and it's annoying for you, but it will get better. And what now is a terrible early start will, when it's the summer holidays and half term, you are going to have so much time with your kids. And that is so important. And you're going to love it. So it's just hard now. Trust the process.
I'm trusting the process. I'm trusting you too.
Yeah, okay.
Don't do that.
Rick.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers, mate. That's brilliant. Thanks, mate.
Rick Edwards. Lovely bloke. Really funny, isn't he?
He's a really nice bloke. I feel like he's in the trenches, mate.
Yeah, big time.
Morale was low. I felt bad for laughing too much.
No, that's ideal. It makes me feel better. I'm walking on air now.
The problem is, because our kids are getting older and it's getting slightly easier. Obviously, they'll get harder mentally because they're going to become like teenagers and stuff, but it's physically slightly easier. When you talk to someone who's right in the heart of it, you realise, it does make you realise how much easier it is for us.
Yeah,
it's all relative, isn't it?
Like, we're a bunch of fucking losers.
But right, Rick Edwards, listen to Eureka, his new podcast. Listen to him on Five Live. And we'll see you on Tuesday.
See you Tuesday, guys.
Bye.